So Carmen, A Hip Hopera, is quite possibly the most important black movie of our lifetime. I remember it was my introduction to battle rap, that scene with Mos Def and Mekhi Phifer coming up in an extremely Christian household. Didn't have access to hip hop for real. Couldn't really listen to rap out loud. But I found this movie after my brother had moved out, and this was what I played on repeat because I didn't have CDs and couldn't really watch videos over and over. So I had this DVD that had this rap scene in it. So when Tramell asked me if I rap, this is really the only thing I've studied to say, yeah, I rap. And so I spit a couple of lines from both sides of the battle rap as if they were one. And Tramell was like, damn, that shit was fire. And I was like, yep.
Welcome to Why Not Put On. My name is Janae Johnson. The voice who opened up our show was none other than Darius Simpson, sharing a soundbite about the movie Carmen, the hip hopera. So this is the way we want to open all of our shows. If you have an experience with a black movie of any kind, whether it be a tradition you have around it, a question that's been swirling in your head, or maybe some weird shit went down when you went to go see it in theater, whatever it is, we want to hear about it. Email us at whynotputon@gmail.com. Why is a letter, not a word, in the email and in the title of the show. So we have an amazing debut show for you today. For those of you who are not familiar with this podcast, if you ain't hip to the hip talk, Why Not Put On is a podcast aiming to explore black movies and how they have informed our art, relationships, and identities. Each episode, we will call upon a poet or storyteller who has selected one of their favorite black movies of all time, and their job is to share why they want to put this particular movie on. And I also got some more questions up my sleeve. So if you could hear me say word up.
Word up.
If you could hear me say cuckoo. Woo. If you could hear me say sauce.
Sauce.
That was amazing. You can use any of the above from the comfort of your home, your car, wherever you are enjoying us from, while I officially introduce our first guest to Why Not Put On. Give it up for Ebony Stewart.
Hey.
How you feeling?
Yo, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling pretty good. Like my curls is popping. My fro is pretty big. You know what I mean? Out here in these hot Houston, Texas streets. Okay.
Hot Houston, Texas streets. That sounds painful.
It is.
I'm so sorry.
It actually is.
Yeah.
It is very painful. I don't know. I mean, you know, we live here, so it is what it is.
So, all right, I'm going to try to recollect when I first came across you and your work. I feel like I first saw you in 2014, and Texas rolls deep for their people.
They
roll especially and disrespectfully deep for you. And I heard your name before, but I had never seen you spit. And when you got on the stage, I was like, oh, I get it. I get it. I get why people are loving up on Ebony Stewart. And I think when you perform, and just as a person, you are hella funny. You have a presence that everybody loves. Your poems in general, they're honest, they're raw, but they're authentic. And I got to know you more through organizing, and you always show up and show out for whoever and however you can. You've got off of flights and helped me out. You'd be like, you know what? I'm getting off this flight, but you know, I'll come through. I'll roll through and I'll host this little bow for you.
It's crazy.
And I've appreciated it.
I can't believe you bring that up. I can't believe you bring it up.
So I am honored to have you as the first guest artist on Why Not Put On. So thank you. Thank you for being here.
No, thank you for doing that. Thank you for saying that. Listen, I always say this. People are so good to me, yo. And I think that's a amazing reflection that you just had of like remembering how we first met, because I'm sure I was probably nervous and using like jokes and laughter and sarcasm as a way to get myself through that slam, because like sometimes you just don't want to be slamming, you know?
Yeah. You want to slam until you show up and you're like, actually, nah. Why do I have to do this? Why did I put myself through this? Can I go home?
That's right. And you know what happened is that year I decided anytime after that, if I slam, I'm going to have a good ass time doing it. You know what I mean? Like I'm going to have fun and be my regular self and not try to like walk in like I'm the artist, you know, whoever, whatever, baddest mama jam up in this joint, you know, like.
Come on, bad. You know, just baddest mama jamma up in this joint. Come on.
I just like, y'all, everybody good. Y'all hungry too. That's what's up.
Word. So tell us who you are, what you do, and where you rap.
Man, those are all good questions, Janae. Let's just start with that. Thank you for having me. This is really dope. My name is Ebony Stewart. I am a touring performance artist, community activist, sexual health advocate, social work, and therapists, I guess, you know, that are striving to be. But most of all, I'm an auntie, you know what I'm saying? I'm an auntie for the people.
Hey, auntie.
And I definitely rep for Texas, the whole of Texas, because we all wrote
the whole of Texas.
The whole of it. The artist now, child.
Okay. I was going to ask some follow-up questions to that, because I've been to Texas.
Don't even do it.
Didn't you win some competitions? What's going on? What you be doing with your life, Boo?
I did. I won so I won Women of the World in 2017. I was a co-champion along with Oompa. And I does some poetry from time to time, and I do poems and slam because I feel like I'm good at it and I'm really competitive, but ultimately I feel like where I truly am in my purpose is helping other people like gain whatever exposure or shine they feel like they want or deserve or actually need in that moment, you know?
Yeah. And, I know that you have done some theater as well. You have a one person show?
Yeah. So I got two of them joints, Hunger and Ocean. We got some awards for that, some B.I. and Pains, mm-hmm. and some Paul Cohen. These are all people I don't know what they mean as far as accolades, but they say it's a big deal. So I say that's what's up, you know what I'm saying?
Oh man. All right. So let's transition then to actually, you know, what we want to talk about. And not that we don't want to talk about you, but we coming here to talk about your movie. I asked you what your favorite movie is. So what movie did you choose to put on today?
All right. So check it. Bet.
Come on. You about to freestyle? Come on. Come on.
Listen.
I got you.
Catch it. Coming to America.
Ooh.
Sorry. Eddie Murphy. Arsenio Hall. You know, there's a bunch of, it's an all black cast, okay? That's first and foremost. Came out, was released in 1988.
Come on.
I think I was like maybe six, but that's not the point. That's not what we're talking about.
It ain't the point.
The movie is a classic. I really, 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 really mess with Coming to America. I've seen it. I probably watched it more than 100 times. I probably know every single word to the movie. I'm one of those annoying people that when this movie come on, you don't want to watch it with me because I'm the one that think they was in the movie or helped write it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You don't watch this one.
They like, shut up.
Right. It's like, well, what? You ain't seen this?
That's how they say it. I want to hear them say it. Yeah. Yeah, you're one of those.
Yeah, I am.
You just get in your feels.
I actually feel like I get in my element. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm helping the role, the characters.
I'm helping y'all out, okay?
That's right.
So Coming to America is a classic. I'm super excited to talk about this movie. And one of the things that I think about is how joyous and how celebratory the movie is.
Yeah.
And how you could watch the movie with different generations in a household.
Man.
So you touched on it a little bit, but what makes this movie so much of a classic to where, even though it's rated R, It's R-rated, you know. It ain't for everybody, but what makes it so enjoyable for like an entire Black household?
Look, so the first time I saw this movie that I have like a clear recollection of every single thing that I was observing and also just not knowing, right? How it was going to transform or transcend into my work or me as a person, is that this movie is an all Black cast. It has just pure talent of Black people. And so it's also my first recognition of all the isms being in a movie, right? So we had like colorism, classism, racism, socialism. We got misogyny in that thing. We got humor, we got joy. And
I like that. We got misogyny in that thing.
Hey, it's there now.
Yeah, it is. It sure is.
It is glaring. Yes. Okay. But I do like the way that all of those different isms get flipped in the way that we think about things. But I'm just like, yo, it's the first time I had ever actually seen an all Black anything. And then the three white people that's in the movie, are either the help or are homeless, I believe.
Right. Yeah.
And Eddie Murphy plays a white guy, right?
Right.
Barbershop. So it's just like, man, this seems really important. You know what I mean? For this to be our first idea of what we now would look at as Wakanda, or however people feel about that movie, right?
Yeah, yeah. For people who have not watched it, shame on you. But how would Ebony Stewart, in her own words, describe the plot of Coming to America? I want to hear the Ebony Stewart version.
Ebony Stewart plot. All right, so check it.
Come on.
Listen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this Black dude from Africa.
Keep going.
From Africa, okay? He owned all of Zamunda because he the prince, okay? His mama and daddy got money, meaning his face is on the money, okay? They decide that they want him to get married, right? So they choose a wife for him, a dark-skinned honey.
Come on,
right?
Honey.
And then he's like, nah, man, I want to, what does he say? Somebody's royal oats. He want to put his royal oats.
He wants to sow his royal oats.
That's right. So he can find the kind of woman he want to be with. So he take his ass to Queens, New York, okay? Because he feel like that's royalty or whatever. And then he get out there and he figure out...
Keep going. This is great.
He get out there, right? Him and his homie, because he had to have a homie with him. And so him and his homie like real bougie or whatever, bougie. And then they get out there and they like, okay, well, what we about to do? And so the whole movie is basically like a romantic type comedy of this Black dude only surrounding himself with Black people in America, okay? And trying to find him a woman that he could marry, that he could also take back to Zamunda.
You heard it here first.
That's how the whole thing goes. Now you got to watch it to really get all like the extra layers in that thing. But
You were talking about his homie who's bougie, and I feel like that's me. I would be. I am semi. I am the person to be like, why did you take me here? And why can't I get a hot tub in my apartment?
Right. That's right. That's what you did.
That would be me. I would call home. I would snitch by calling home to get some more money. I'd be like, you know what? I can't live like this. I can't. What's the worst that could happen? They gonna take me back?
That's right. Bring me back.
I am Simi. But what characters what characters resonate with you in Coming to America?
Yo, that's so wild. Okay, so what characters? Now I gotta really think about it, because I don't know if I've ever wanted to be Simi, because I felt like Simi kind of came in and messed the game up. Like, we out here trying to figure out this American dream that they talking about, even though we are the dream.
That's
right.
Me. Yeah.
But so like, okay, like that's me. Let's see, who would I be? I think I think my character probably changes a few different times, which speaks to like the way that Black people have to come to the stage, the page, and their life experiences, right? So I think I'm definitely the mom, right?
Okay. I can see that.
Who's, yeah, like, you know, like, listen, we live good. Okay, you want to go out there and do your thing. That's cool. Oh, yo, she a nice girl. You know, like, wanting to change the ways, right? I think I'm also, in a lot of ways, I can be seen as the barber in the shop.
Which one? The actual barber? The one that's
the main one. I don't even know his name either. Yeah, the main one who is just not impressed with anything, right? That'd be $8, right? And he just kind of, he lives his life in a very like honest way of like, no, this is what Blackness has to offer, right? And you need to tone that down, or this is your problem. You need to find your American girl who's getting good with her father, you know what I mean? And you with her type stuff. And then I think like the Randy, is it Randy Watson?
Randy Watson? A young man that we all know as Joe the Policeman in the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama.
Yo, I think I have been Randy Watson a time or two. If you're ever a poet and you show up, or you travel, you tour, whatever, and you show up thinking that you're really about to put it down and nobody cares.
Nobody. About they like boo, but they're silent, so it's even worse.
It's the silence of like where people are like, what else you gonna do? What, how else are you gonna entertain us? Is that it?
Is that all you got,
Nick?
Is that it? And this is a free event. I didn't come here for this though.
And then it's that one audience member clapping.
It's good.
What was good?
Good. Well, good. Well, good.
I think I've had to definitely be Randy Watson, just my own cheerleader, right? And feel good about what I just did. But then also the main, the lead role, the lead character that Eddie Murphy plays, I feel like oftentimes has been myself, where it's like, I just want to see what I can see. And I don't believe that this is all that there is to be offered, that there's got to be more, right? And how do I advocate and have agency over myself, right? So I could see that, the explorer. How do I figure out what I really want and be true to myself in a lot of those moments?
So those moments that Eddie Murphy had, what are the ones that stuck out? And also, I'm interested to know, what were the scenes and quotes that stuck with you over the years?
Specifically, I remember as I got older and I reflect back on my first time ever going to New York and what I thought the experience was going to be. Right. So we're going like time over now and going forward in Ebony being a grown up and me looking back on that moment of, oh, yo, I'm in New York for the first time. I don't know what I'm supposed to expect or what I'm supposed to think, but there's a lot of thrill that goes into like just the name. And now I want to assimilate in a sense, right? And I talked to some of my friends and they were like, just act like you know what you're doing and know where you are and won't nobody mess with you. And so they were like essentially telling me to be a New Yorker, walk like a New Yorker, talk like a New Yorker. And I just thought that was so interesting because I'm like, no, I really actually don't know. I never been here before. So I don't know what is and what isn't. And I think back to that moment of Hakeem and Simi getting to Queens and not knowing, right, like how to be. Well, then let's dress like New Yorkers, right? But very specifically, different quotes that stick out to me or even just moments in the movie. So the immediate opening of like this kingdom, right, was really grand to me. And then you have the ceremony, which is the wedding, and all of these Black people are there in their African garb and they looking really rich and classy, you know, and you just hoping that there's some kind of trap music that's happening, but no.
you're just hoping that there's trap music.
You're hoping it's some kind of trap happening over there in Zamunda, right? And what takes place is that the queen is about to come out. They have this big dance sequence. Do you remember this? I tried to learn this dance.
Absolutely. You tried to learn the dance. You know Paula Abdul choreographed that?
Can you believe that she choreographed that? It has got to be one of the greatest things that she's ever done that nobody knows she did.
Right.
So we got the opening scene. We got that pre-dance sequence. We have the queen coming out in that all gold. Or she's mm-hmm. going to be, right? Like she's the, what do we
right. call queen to be. Sorry, that was what.
That's right.
Is that what you was looking for? I can.
The song.
She's your
yeah.
queen.
I mean, it's a little, but that's okay. That's all right. You ain't got to have an octave yeah, right now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that mm-hmm. could be put together later. Yeah. So, yeah, like that one particular song sticks out so much so that my mother. Actually asked me to sing that like at her wedding, just like to be funny, to be silly, because she knows how much I love it. That's just to let you know the bond that me and my mama got that don't make no sense to nobody else but us. But yeah, and then there's this there's the date scene. I don't know if you remember, but they go on like this series of blind dates at this club, and there's all different women, and my name is Peaches, and I'm the best, and all the DJs want to feel my breath. Hey, there's the part with Samuel Jackson, who I personally think that Samuel Jackson might actually be my real dad, because I feel like we favor a lot. But I guess the like one quote that really sticks out, like more than Soul Glow, more than Sexual Chocolate, is the how's it go? We appreciate the kind that jingles, but we'd rather have the kind that folds. Yo, anything that talk about money, like, and Black people being like, yo, pay us, is really important to me because I've used it, especially like when features are there and I'm introducing them and I'm getting the audience to contribute. It's like, yo, I'm sure you got some change, but go on and make it fold too, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I have an unpopular opinion. And I want to ask you about it. I do have a popular opinion about the movie. Lisa McDowell ain't shit.
Ain't shit at all.
Can you get down with that unpopular opinion?
I can get down with that, man. I think that everybody on the whole roster of cast is at some point wasn't shit. So they all played a serious role in that narrative.
But going back to Lisa ain't shit. Because
tell us,
Lisa didn't even want to promote her daddy's restaurant at the Black Awareness Week rally. Lisa, right. Lisa cheated on Daryl.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa cheated on Daryl.
Mm-hmm.
Like she didn't break up with him.
That's right.
She just said, "I'm mad at you,"
right.
And then she went on dates with Prince Akeem.
No,
and she didn't even. And she didn't even, I don't even think she liked Prince Akeem. I think she just had the "my man ain't shit" blues.
Ooh.
I do. I just think that she just had that blues. Like, my man got a Jerry curl. My man ain't shit. Like, I think that she just had the "my man ain't shit" blues. And she's also a basic ass character. She didn't give me any type of real emotion. Even when she was mad at him on the subway, I was like, try harder.
Right? You just, got really mad, sis. Can you show us what anger looks like this time? Take it again.
Yeah. Like, we already know Daryl ain't shit. Daryl fixes his mustache with his hands in his car, you know, in his Pontiac. So we knew he wasn't shit. But yeah, I think the undercover person is Lisa McDowell.
That's right.
But the Coming to America 2 is coming out at the end of this year. What things would you want to leave behind, and what things do you want to see?
That's really hard for me because I feel like I don't know how I feel about having a sequel just yet. I don't feel like I'm on board, if I'm being honest. Yeah, I'm kind of like, why? For what purpose? I'm curious to see what they're going to do different and how they're going to address the times that have changed and then the insensitivity that they added from the first one into this new joint. So I'm not really all the way sold that there needs to be a sequel of any sorts, to be honest with you on that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think that folks rush sequels a lot. There's a lot of people who don't put a lot of thought into it, but just want to appease the fans who love the original. I've been thinking in what ifs, and Coming to America could have been in L.A. They flipped the coin. Could have been in L.A., could have been in Queens. What if Coming to America was based in Texas?
Well, first of all, you probably want to have it in Houston, Texas, and you probably want to have it in third or fourth ward, because that's where you're going to get the most Black people. But also, you probably have, you probably would have had a random Black guy on a horse, because that's really real. they probably wouldn't have had any taxis, or they would have had to try to figure out how to get everywhere, anywhere. Which also would have meant that there's a lot of scenes of them driving to places. And I think that would have been pretty interesting, actually. Yeah. But the horse, the hood, and them driving on these freeways in the heat.
Word, word. So one thing that I'll say, too, about the movie is that this is just a fact that it came out in 1988. I just want to drop some of the things. So I was like, what other movies came out in 1988? Because I just was not following. I was 3 years old, just exposing myself. But Beetlejuice, Mississippi Burning, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Die Hard, The Land Before Time, Stand and Deliver, The First Hairspray, Naked Gun, Michael Jackson Moonwalker, School Days, I'm Gonna Get You Sucker. So those
classics.
Absolutely. School Days and I'm Gonna Get You Sucker. We're gonna have a whole conversation about that. But Coming to America by far did the best in the box office. And they did not get any type of shine, any type of real awards for this shit. You know, if you want to know what racism looks like, if you really want to know what racism looks like,
come
do
on,
you want to know? I would say go back to 1989.
Go back.
When they could have got all the acclaim for the success in a box office.
Come on.
Come on. So, but it was this movie did better than any movie that year.
Wow.
By far, almost double. So, yeah, just wanted to drop that fact.
That jewel is necessary to drop. Thank you.
So why is your artist or performer side attracted to this movie?
I think my artist side is attracted to this movie just because of the multiple roles that my work plays, and the way that it is transcribed or received and given. Mm. And there are also times when I feel like I come to my writing as a person who has not figured it all out, who's going to make mistakes, who you might not agree with my viewpoints. You might not get it. It might not apply to you. And then at the same time, I'm being specific and I'm being general, right? And so with that, there's this possibility of layers and joy and putting women first, or putting myself first and making sure that my art not only has a heartbeat, but has legs in this thing, right? Mm. And it's going to keep going and being able to call itself out at times, or speak to or say the things that you might not think about or say, but then I guess come to it in a way where I'm challenging as well, right? So I think humor is really huge for me. Even if there's a time where you could be talking about something sensitive, I think anger is a thing that my work does. And I'm just picking out certain emotions that I feel like the movie either spends time describing or you actually feel, right? In different parts of your life when you're watching this movie. So
Who do you feel like this movie was for?
I think, like I said, I really feel like this movie was for Black people. Black joy and Black equity. I really wholeheartedly feel that. that this was for us. The original FUBU, you know what I'm saying? For us, by us.
Come on. Come on. Come on. Original FUBU. Yo, your hand action when you if only y'all could hear the hand action that's happening right now. All right, so thank you for the discussion about Coming to America. I'm so glad that you chose the movie because this is the first time I've had to truly sit down and analyze it and still love it. You know, I'm a very critical watcher and there's a lot of movies that I'm like, I can't do it. I'm sorry. I used to love it, but now it's ruined.
That's real. That's real. Yeah. It's like one of those things where once you know better, you do better. Yeah. But I do appreciate this opportunity to even look at movies in this lens. Also, I want to make sure to say that, Janae, this was hard. Like, there are so many movies. Yeah. And it's like, how do you choose? So I just went with my gut. Yeah. That was the first movie that popped in my mind. I was like, bet, let's go with it. But there's so many more.
I'm glad that you went with your gut, though. Because I think there was a reason why you were like, Coming to America, too easy. Boom, got it. Next question. I'm ready. When do you want to do this interview? Let's talk about it. So we are going to transition to a segment of the show that I'm naming Hot Grits, the Hot Grits section of the show. So I got some quick fire questions for you. Come on. You stirring the grits? You stirring them? Come on, stir the grits. So there's a list of hot fire, quick fire. I watch a lot of cooking shows.
Okay.
So quick fire questions for you. They're going to be really, really random. I just need you to do what you did when you chose the movie. I want you to go with your instinct, your first instinct. There's no wrong answers. I might laugh at you a little bit, but it's going to be all good. It's going to be all fun.
Okay.
All right.
I'm ready.
Cool. All right. So this is a question we start off all the shows with, or we plan to. Do you like your grits with sugar, butter, or nothing at all?
Okay, so check it.
Come on.
Usually, it's just butter.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes, it's both.
Ooh. Wow. All right. We gonna move right along with that one. In Coming to America, the women scattered rose petals. If you were of the same cloth, if you're of the same royalty, what would people scatter when you walked?
Oh man, I really don't like to waste stuff, yo. Like I'm actually like really clean, so this is difficult. I don't like pollution and things like this. this is really hard, friends. But I think rose petals will still be a thing because they can go back into the ground and the earth or something like that, I think. But maybe if people could just, you know what I'm saying, have cupcakes in their hand and just hold them out and I could just walk by and choose one and be like, yeah, thank you.
I want that one. I want your money. All right. So, what gesture or quote do people know you best for?
It's probably the side eye. I tend to side-eye things. I have a face that can't lie or hide how I feel, and it usually is in the side-eye.
What is a favorite Black joy summertime activity?
Cool cups.
I'm moving right along. All right, on a scale of 0 to 10, you live in Texas, so I don't even know how you're going to answer this question. On a scale of 0 to 10, how well can you shovel snow?
A 2.
On a scale of 0 to 10, how well can you swim?
A 5.
Who is an underrated 90s musical artist?
Underrated?
Underrated. In your heart, in your mind.
I'm going to just go ahead and say Tevin Campbell. People really don't talk about Tevin Campbell as much. But dude really came out with some bomb music, you know, with some really nice albums.
If you were an R&B singer, what would be your go-to ad lib?
It probably would be
mm. I love how your head is tilting as you say, It is 1 a.m. What did you get at McDowell's restaurant? So we go on Coming to America thing. Not McDonald's, McDowell's. What did you get?
I think I'm still going to have to go with the fries.
How many pillows do you require on your bed?
4.
What is an item that you put in the fridge almost empty? Come on. Be honest for the people.
Oh, Jesus. This is for the people. Oh, man. So it's likely ice cream because I like to come back to my ice cream. I'm not going to eat all of it. I'm going to put it right back in there just to remind myself that I can reward myself later if I feel the need.
What is your least favorite thing poets do?
Which is to say, it's least favorite. That's a line, but I feel like it's now something that they do.
Finish this phrase. Bring back blank.
My money.
Bring back my money. Hey, yo. Hey, yo, you better bring back my money.
Okay, here it is. Here it is. Bring back my change. That's it. Because that's the money, right? Like, bring back my change.
Yep, yep.
Also, that double entendre, it could mean something else too.
Yep. If you could see the neck and the head combination right now. Which artist, poetry or non-poetry, inspired your writing the most?
Narazaki Shange.
Where?
Without doubt.
No disrespect to the people who birthed you, but if someone were to give you a middle name based on your poetry, what would it be?
So this is going to sound really, really ridiculous, but sometimes I just like how curse words sound in my name. And so I'm going to say Ebony motherfucking Stewart. That's off the dome right there. That's free game.
Boom. So let me reintroduce our guest artist for this particular podcast. I am honored, I am humbled to introduce Ebony motherfucking Stewart.
I'm an artist, which also means I'm a creator because I create things. A storyteller since I have stories to tell. A visionary. I write about where I've been. These poems act as self-help. I'm a healer. Not always for myself, but one time, a kid told me he almost killed himself, but he heard one of my poems and decided to keep living. And from that day forward, I was like, today is a good day to keep someone alive. People ask me how I did it or how they should do it. And I'm not sure if they're asking me about the kid or themselves. What I've come to learn is, can't nobody tell when I'm not doing well but me. I get to travel across the country and do poems for a living. Like, that's my job. And out of 50 states, I've performed in 47 of them. I read an article that said only 20% of people in the US are doing what they love, or whatever sad statistic it was. And I was like, my God, ain't damn nothing in me. I'm doing exactly what I've always wanted to do, so I must be blessed. Must be exemplifying all this miracle. I am stressed and winning. I look at and update my curriculum vitae daily, and I be like, damn, I'm surprised I even knew how to say that word. And ain't nobody wish nothing bad on me but me. Like everything I ever wanted, I manifested at the end of each meditation. I asked the universe to make me undeniably enough. And people be mad happy when I show up. One time, I performed for 200,000 people and I didn't throw up. It was so cool and exhausting. Did you know? I could touch what feels like a million people's energy and help them feel seen, but go back to my hotel room feeling so fulfilled yet lonely. Yeah, it's amazing. Another time, I thought I was going to marry this guy I had been with for like 6 years out of my life, but he said he hated my lifestyle, even though this is my life's work, because my work means I'm never home. But every time I came back, he was gone, as in emotionally unavailable, mentally abusive. I have extreme PTSD from that unhealthy relationship, but someone asked me to do that one poem about that one time where I made him mine. May you find a lover that helps you love yourself. May you find a lover that doesn't require you to give more to them than you have to give to yourself. Did I mention I paid off my student loans with poetry? Can't nobody tell me I'm not the shit but me. I get so sad sometimes I think I'm losing my mind, and I must be, since I enrolled in graduate school last May. I guess I returned to my oppressor. I am whoever the fuck I think I am, but I wish being a good person paid more. I heard It's the wounds people can't see that hurt the most, but I've seen sunsets that look like somewhere tomorrow. My heart is on fire, so I'm chasing the day. At night, I don't sleep, I grind. I've been in my prime like 9 times. I got so much love, I give and keep giving. I have so much advice that are really opinions, or maybe they're just hard facts I haven't hardly learned yet. Did you know? There are people who ask me how I'm doing by also commenting on my weight. And here I am, some foolish somebody that didn't actually hate the way they look today. But you're right, girl, must be the depression. But I'm the kind of giant that's been through what I've been through and you can still depend on. I gave all that I had, and you ain't never known a Black woman who ain't did that. My friends call on me when they're down and out, just in need. And what good is a God that can't speak life into somebody? Check on your strong friends. Check on your strong friends. Check on your strong friends. Don't believe us. I promise we're pretending. Have you ever tried to tell someone you're not okay and they're like, you're good, and you're like, but I'm not. And they're like, you got this. And you're like, but I don't. And they're like, keep going. And you're like, okay. Thanks. You're right. I could do this with my eyes closed. I'm so overwhelmed that one time I was drowning and screaming, but everybody thought I was smiling and swimming. I died in that dream. Then I woke up on an airplane flying to a different country to do poetry. And I thought, my God, ain't damn nothing in me. I'm doing exactly what I've always wanted to do. I'm so blessed. I'm so blessed. I'm so blessed that my life is crazy. My heart is racing. I'm probably dehydrated. Traveling does some awful things to the body. But the one thing I can tell you about being successful is that you have to love what you're doing. And can't nobody steal my joy. Can't nobody steal my joy, not even myself. Somebody said, or I heard, if your path is more difficult, it's because your calling is higher. So I say I be hero and legend. Nobody built like me, I designed myself. But every time I climb, my community get cosigned. Divinity defined. Cheers to the Most High. I just pray I leave something good behind.
Hey.
Wow!
Woo! Ask the universe to make me undeniably enough.
Yes.
Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for that poem. Thank you for being on this show, Ebony. No, this is so much fun.
You're so dope.
Yeah, you are. So, where can people find you? Where can people find your work?
Right. So, if you Google Ebony Stewart, that's EBONYSTEWART. If you're on IG, that's Gully Princess, GULLY Princess, ain't no Z's, ain't no underscores. And then if you're on Twitter and you appreciate random retweets.
If you appreciate random retweets, follow me on Twitter. That is the realest shit ever.
Yo.
I'm like...
Random retweets. That's my jam. That's EB poetry, like Eb poetry. People call me Eb. Yeah, so Eb.
What's a tip that you would want to give to Black creatives?
A tip I would want to give to Black creatives is it's okay to write the same story more than once. You don't have to have one time where you wrote this story.
I love that. I love that. So I'm going to put on a couple of people as we're ending the show. This show could not have existed without podcasts like Another Round. I used to love that podcast that BuzzFeed had, but, you know, BuzzFeed fucked up. But the hosts, Tracy and Heaven, are amazing. Unbothered by Jemele Hill. Make sure you also check out that Black Ass show. Dulce Sloan, she's also talking Black TV, Black movies. Those are amazing Black podcasts. Are there any people that you want to put on while you got this, you know, platform in front of you right now?
Okay, so check it. I want to definitely put on John Good. He's a poet. Mm-hmm. He's an amazing artist. Yep. Really good friend. I'm gonna put on Nikki Devon. She is the choreographer for Fat Bottom Cabaret, which is an all Black plus size dance troupe. I'm going to put on MC Lotto, who is a comedian here in Houston, Texas, a really good friend. And she just also make you understand that Black women are super funny, right? And so that's my jam. I'm gonna put on people that people might not know who they are, but they got to do the research.
Word. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. Shout out to them. Thank you to our guest, Ebony Stewart. Thank you to Darius Simpson, who submitted the soundbite at the beginning of the show. Thank you to YNME Squadcast. Thank you to everyone, anyone who took the time to listen to our very first episode. Thank you for rocking with us. Boom. We out. We out. We out.
We're happy to get the kind of money that jingles, but we rather the kind that folds. So wait, let me do it like how she do it. Like low key, she had like, you know, one of them kind of like white girls on it. You know what I'm saying? So let me, hold on, let me be right. We are happy to get the kind of money that jingles, but we'd rather have the kind that, nah, let me do it. We are happy to get the kind of money that jingles, but we'd rather have. Well, I can't say rather right now. It's only come out when it's like really, I can't do it on like a white girl thing. So that must have been something that she practiced a lot. All right. So if I was talking to somebody on the phone or whatever, and I would be like trying to, I never talked to nobody to sell no campaign. You know what I'm saying? Like sell no, like, you know what I mean? Like where you got to lean in on them and like get in their pockets. But I feel like black people be like, can you get out my purse? Can I help you? We are happy to get the kind of money that jingles, but we'd rather have the kind that folds. That was it. Hey.